Okay, hello everybody, and my name is Sami Äyrämö, and I work as a research coordinator here at the Faculty of Information Technology. And the title is quite general, but I will show you some recent cases from our research and also some concepts and our views on AI. And this is my group and my colleagues, and it is nice that from our applied projects, there are many students who have become interested in continuing research in these topics and deepen some method development issues, and the research has been continued with funding from doctoral school and by research grants. And we have also AI computing environment, which is coordinated and by Juhani Forsman, and he can provide us good facilities for efficient computation and testing our methods. First of all, I want to explain something about data research, because I've seen that quite many times when I talk about data science, it can be artificial intelligence or machine learning or data analytics or statistics. People are quite confused with this terminology, and I want to explain what I mean by data science. And I like the paper by Leo Breiman, who has written a paper about statistical modeling, two cultures. And many times people ask that, could this artificial intelligence give me an answer to some question or explain something? And how I see this is that we have these classical statistical research questions which we often try to answer these questions by using explanatory approach, using classical statistical methods. So I call it explanatory data analysis. And how I see artificial intelligence mainly is the predictive approach. When we look at our world as a black box, in explanatory approach, it is kind of white box. And we try to understand why these inputs are related to our responses. But in machine learning, we as a method and algorithm developers, quite often we don't even understand the phenomenon enough well to explain it using our methods. But we can still train models to give responses to some inputs. And this is mainly what we do here at the IT faculty. We try to be able to train models that are able to predict what the responses are going to be to the future input variables. But this is the machine learning approach. I think so, and it's mainly artificial intelligence. We try to automate things, or operations, functions, whatever. But sometimes we can use machine learning as a data mining tool, because nowadays we have a huge amount of input variables, huge set of options where to choose the inputs for our models, how to train our models. But we don't know which are the best inputs, most relevant inputs. And then we can use machine learning methods to generate hypotheses. I think that quite often hypotheses can be so complex that we cannot explain them or set them in advance. Then we can use machine learning first to create hypotheses from data, not from literature. And I call it as data mining. So this is the difference between data mining and artificial intelligence. I think that data mining is using machine learning for hypothesis generation, and artificial intelligence is using machine learning for automation things. Okay, this is something that I want to also show, because it's related to our work here during the last 3-4 years. It's nice to have here at least two experts from the Faculty of Sports Sciences who are very good experts in with these applications, and these are from biomechanics, and we have written two papers about predicting features from crowd reaction forces during running. And in classical machine learning, why I'm showing this slide is that I think that deep learning explains quite much the current AI hype. And previously, machine learning has been difficult because in our first paper, we, together with experts from the Faculty of Sports Sciences, we needed to create these input features, our neural network. And it took quite a lot of time to find the best features from our huge set of raw motion analysis data. Okay, it takes some minutes to teach me to use this, but...
Well, maybe no battery, but...
Okay.
Sorry.
I use my... So, neural networks have been difficult to apply because this creation of these input features, it's critical and it's difficult and it takes a lot of time. And more raw data we have, more difficult it will be. But with deep learning, the neural network includes the feature learning part, so it's automated. And this is why current neural networks look like human-like machines, so that they can read the, for example, raw image data without any feature engineering, so that it's the features are created by some, for instance, expert from the Faculty of Sports Sciences. And when we have enough data to train our models and enough computational power, we can train these models. But like I said, this is a real example from our research paper and from our case study. And as you see here, there are quite huge number of parameters in our model, which means that we need quite much data to train this kind of model. And that's still the bottleneck to utilize these methods in Finland, for instance. We need huge amount of data. Okay, here is a set of our pilot studies. And like you see, some of these are just quite usual data analytics cases. Some of these are classical machine learning studies. It's first we need to do some feature engineering as the data is structured, and there's not so much to do some clever innovations, but it's more like a lot of work to find the right models and methods, and then make or train a valid model. And then in some cases we have been able to do some deep learning at least to validate our approach and not to train the final model. I don't say that we have trained the final model for these applications, but we have been able to show that this can work if we have enough data to train the final model and then test its generalization ability, which means that it will work also with the new unseen cases in future. That's important to show before it will be applied on real data. And now there's not yet much to tell about these cases because we are planning these cases, and Arto already mentioned about our joint effort with the biobank data and breast cancer image data. And then we have some collaboration with the Central Hospital of Central Finland with this knee osteoarthritis image data and deep learning. And we are also planning collaboration with the University of Oulu in this case. Okay, one ongoing example of our pilot studies is the SmartZoom training data. Okay, we don't have yet much data to train new machine learning models, but our research question, first research question has been that is it effective to train at SmartZoom, which means that there's no human supervision for customers. And so we received some data from Äänekoski Health Center Hospital. There are 700,000 training sets and about 700 users. The average age is 66 years, so they are not young fitness people, but all kind of citizens with quite high average age. And there are equipment for 18 different exercises which collect the data, but the development, strength development when they exercise, how they progress. And there are 13 exercises with more than 10,000 training sets. And we divided the users into two groups. First, we discarded those cases who have not trained at all. If someone visits the training room once, it may not have any effect, and it's quite difficult to analyze any progress. But we compared regular and irregular users. Here's an example that common problem. There are not so many users who have a lot of training sessions in the data. So most of the users have only very limited number of training sessions. So we need to collect more data also in this case, and more versatile data, more variables. And this is only, like I told you about explanatory approaches, this is absolutely one of those. We just wanted to compare the regular and irregular users, and we found out that yes, it's possible to train without human supervision, so that we can observe some development in the level of strength in quite many different movements. This is interesting that there's, if you don't do anything, you can go down minus 20%, which is quite interesting. It shows that you need to be careful with the quality of data. This is absolutely a data quality issue. Okay, this is an example about development of the strength level, and you can see that most of those customers or users who have trained regularly, their strength level increases, and those who visit the gym only irregularly, most of them, or the development varies around 0%. Another case from Äänekoski, and maybe more machine learning-like case, is the prediction of overweight and obesity in later life from childhood data. And we received data sets which contains more than 14,000 citizens from Äänekoski. The data contains only height and weight information as potential input variables. So it's a time series prediction task. Of course, the date of measurement, when the height and weight have been measured, is also included, and date of birth, so we can calculate the age. And also gender information. We started with the literature review. We tried to find existing models, and especially we were interested in predictive models, which means that the models have been tested with some test data. So with some independent observations that have not been used during the training phase. But we saw that most of the studies are explanatory. So it's just model fitting and explanation of the phenomenon, not for prediction. But there are some studies that had used predictive approach, and we repeated the designs from this using the design study designs from these studies, predictive studies with Äänekoski data. And before we were, although the data is quite simple, height and weight, we needed, in this case, this is a good example. I think that 70 or 80% of time was spent to pre-process the data. We need to clean the data, harmonize data types, because sometimes it's 100 centimeters and sometimes 1 meter. So we need to clean and correct the data quite much. Then we calculated BMI, body mass index, which is quite typical measure for obesity and overweight. And then using interpolation techniques, we formed time series to train our prediction models. And of course, the data was standardized. And then we used the Finnish growth curve data to create our response variable for different ages, which are presented by in Saari et al. Publication. But before we, in order to understand the data better, we did some unsupervised learning before training any predictive models. And we saw interesting subgroup from data, so this is one group of subgroup of children among girls, and so we have five after clustering, we have five subgroups, and we see here that there are they are from 0 to 8 years at the beginning. They are 0, and here they are about 8 years old. So this is from 0 to 8. And these curves show how the BMI develops during the first 8 years. And these are quite normal cases, but you see here that there's one group which is quite difficult to predict without any other information. If we have only BMI or height and weight information, it's difficult to train a model to predict this development. But if we would have some other information, we might be able to detect this group at very early stage here. And then it might be possible to do something, react some way here at the very early stage before they will go to this trend. And the same thing was found out for boys. There's one group, the development is very normal here, but it would be interesting to get more data, more versatile data, to detect this subgroup here during the first year, this 500, so it's 1 year somewhere here. Could we probably train a model that could detect this group of boys during their first year? And this is a kind of information for further research and studies, because with the weight and height information, we are not able to train the model. But based on our literature review, we selected a set of study designs, and we repeated those designs with Äänekoski data to see if it's possible to make valid and reliable predictions using Finnish data. And it's these are the reference results from previous studies, and you see here the sensitivity, detection rate is, it varies from 11, about 10%, which is quite low, and to almost 90%. And with Äänekoski data, we divided the data to training set, and then this is the part that was not used for training. This is for testing. And these are the test values. And we see here that, for instance, for this red cell model or study design, we obtained better sensitivity and specificity with Äänekoski data than in the original case. So it's a promising data set, and I think it will enable us to train useful models for Finnish healthcare in future, but we need to combine and collect good quality data and a lot. Okay, this is a kind of summary what I just told. Then something.
Can I have one question?
Yes.
About the figures you had for these groups. Okay, this. Yes. So basically, what I see here is that if a person has a big BMI at the age of 300 days, he or she will have a big index later on. But what is remarkable here is that in some of two groups the increase is exponential. And that would be interesting to know how these groups are different.
Yeah, so you mean these? Yes, that's true.
Do you have any explanation?
No, I'm not a specialist, I'm method development. And that's why, but we this is an ongoing project, and we have not yet discussed about the results with the doctors from Äänekoski, and so I cannot explain this.
What are the group sizes? Because,
sorry?
What are the group sizes?
Group size? Is Ilkka here?
So are these two groups small ones or are
I can't remember. I cannot answer.
No, but these subgroups.
I don't know, but
so are there some anomalies possibly? Or are they some solid groups?
I need to check that. Ilkka is not, because I think he would remember. But there's quite a lot of data, so this 14,000, so it's, because quite many times these cluster studies have been made with 30 persons, and then it's quite, results are often quite questionable, but this case, I cannot answer about the crop sizes now, but this, in this figure, these groups shouldn't be anomalies. But it's difficult to explain them because we have only information about their height and weight. Okay, then about this deep learning. We have done this crowd reaction force pilot study to enable the use of deep learning methods for biomechanical data. We have a good abilities here in Jyväskylä to collect this kind of data from walking and running and whatever. Two guys there knows much about this application. And then we have trained a model, deep learning model, for counting cells from histopathological images, and the results were quite promising. So you see here the error distribution. This is cell count and this is the error, and according to pathologists, this was quite satisfiable results, but this is only validation results. We had, we don't have test data for tests on independent data sets. And now we are planning a research case with this breast cancer data together with Artos group from Kuopio and also pathologists here from the local hospital, and then also collaboration with the local hospital on this osteoarthritis data, in which researchers from Oulu have already done some initial results and quite good promising results about the, using deep neural networks to detect or create the states of osteoarthritis in the knee joint. And there's one grading scale is the Kellgren-Lorenz scale, which is 4 scale. 4 grade scale, and this is the early stage osteoarthritis case, and this is the highest grade. And in addition to train a prediction model to tell what is the stage of the osteoarthritis in the knee joint, one approach is to use also this visualization. Now it's a new approach to artificial intelligence, which is called explainable AI, and it means that we try to explain where our neural network sees the osteoarthritis. To train these models, it's completely dependable on the training data and whether the medical doctors are able to classify the training data correctly. And it seems that these most important cases, these early stage cases, they're very difficult to train for a neural network. And it's not because of the capacity of neural network, but it's because of the quality of training data. And we have plans to test current models on that have been trained on population data. We have a plan to test these models on patient data and maybe fine-tune the models later. And we have a nice environment here with IBM Power9 computer for training these models. And this is something where we are experts. We are dependent on data because our models cannot learn without data. But there's a lot of expertise in these states also that we need and we need to develop it and collect information from other studies also, or learn from other studies. And then one important thing is that here's the money, here's the value. Data is important. It's often said that data is oil and money, but models, algorithms that have seen data and trained in a valid way and maybe even show that their significance have been also assessed and tested with a good test data, then we have something that is useful. And then we can use some real inputs and our models are hopefully reliable enough to be used in healthcare. And the amount of or need of data is huge. You can look at the studies where deep neural networks, the methods behind the AI hype have been used. The training data sets are huge often. So this is something we need to improve in Finland. Collect bigger and bigger data sets with good quality and informative features. Thank you. Questions or? Yep.
So when you are telling that you need lots of data for deep learning, do you mean that deep learning is inefficient?
Inefficient. If we try to model the distribution of some phenomenon. It takes a lot of data, and if you look at the if you use simple models, yeah, it's oh. You may not need so much data, but if you want to adjust all these parameters, I think it's in a unique way, reliable way. You mean algorithmic efficiency or computational efficiency or statistical efficiency? Or?
All kind of efficiencies, because yeah. You told that you need 70,000 cases mm. and 500,000
yes, cases. That's the challenge for... Challenge. If you have 10 examples and you try to fix these all these parameters, 1 million parameters, it's not possible.
Okay. Okay. Then another question. You told that you can these networks can produce novel hard cases.
Mm.
How does that happen?
How we have used it is it's the okay, I would have another presentation for that, but it's the basic principle is to try different set of input features and to see which are the most relevant or most powerful predictors for the response variable. And one of the simplest methods is, for instance, Lasso regression, which includes the it's a selection, variable selection method, not only regression method, but it also prune out variables, and that's very simple approach that we have often used first to see which are the most relevant or powerful input features. But then we have also tried to find the most powerful predictors with neural networks. And then with neural networks, it's quite difficult to explain why they are the most powerful. It's difficult to explain this
okay,
connection.
Thank you very much, Sami.